This was the situation in modern times as well, in countries from Eastern Europe and until North Africa, where although many children would enter the educational process at its most elementary level, that is to say, learning how to read, learning how to read the Torah, etc., the fact is that very few stayed on for the higher levels of learning. Only families that were either wealthy could afford this, or families that recognized that their child is a prodigy, some sort of a young genius, worth supporting through higher levels of academic pursuit. Only in those cases would a child actually remain in some sort of academic framework. Academic meaning Torah study framework. Girls were usually left out of this process, notwithstanding some frequently cited exceptions in rabbinic literature that probably just prove the rule. One of the great upheavals of Jewish norms in recent years has been the growing involvement of women in higher levels of traditional education. And even among ever-growing Orthodox circles, women are now regularly being introduced into the entire corpus of Judaic learning, something almost entirely unheard of just a few generations ago. Women are now beginning to teach Talmud, to study Talmud, and to teach Talmud at the highest levels, and this was something almost totally non-existent just one generation ago. This is a major, major upheaval in Jewish communal life, and the ramifications for future generations are apparently very, very significant. In Judaism, marriage is the normal and highly preferable state of life for adults. Rabbis who opted for celibacy in order to enhance their religious training and knowledge are few and far between. There are such cases where a rabbi says, "I lust for Torah, let the world procreate by others." But frankly, most of his colleagues frowned on that type of approach. And that would not be the norm. The imagery of God's love for Israel was commonly compared to marital relations. By the way, the same thing is to be found in the church, right? Where the relationship between God and the church is like a husband's love for his wife. And the rabbis frequently refer to God's presence in a good marriage as sort of a third partner. Today, Judaism is monogamous. Although nothing in the Bible, or even in later Jewish law, actually forbade men from having more than one wife. A decree was issued by one rabbinic sage in Western Europe, somewhere in the late 10th century. His name was Rabbeinu Gershom. A decree was issued preventing Ashkenazi Jews, that is to say Jews of Western Europe, from having more than one wife. But this was not accepted at the time by other Jews. And there were other areas of the Jewish community where, in fact, Jews continued to have more than one wife. Up until the 20th century, after the founding of the State of Israel, Jews were brought to Israel from Yemen, and many of them still had more than one wife. This, of course, is totally forbidden today. And today, throughout Judaism, it is forbidden not only in the State of Israel, but no Jews today have a practice or are permitted to marry more than one wife. In ancient times, the marriage process and the ceremonies took place in stages. Today, all of these are concentrated and performed at one time, at the marriage ceremony. But it used to be a much longer and drawn-out process. The first stage of marriage was the betrothal. In Hebrew, the word for this is kiddushin. At this time, the groom would give the bride an object of specific value. Today it's a ring. And in front of two witnesses, he would declare that with this object, you are betrothed to me. This ceremony created the initial bond between the two. And so the woman could no longer, right, look for a husband elsewhere. But the marriage had not been consummated. It was not complete yet until they reached a second stage. And the second stage in antiquity might have taken place only months later.